And welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is your host, Kevin, coming to you from the Coins Plus Clock Tower studio inside, of course, the Clock Tower building on Division Street how about that? 3201 North Division. Boy, there's a lot of divisions there, isn't there? It's good to have a degree in mathematics. Division Street, 99207. You can contact us by phone, 509-444-0044 local. Outside the area, toll-free, 877-TAP-COIN, 877-827-2646. Or through the website at coinsplus.com. We are continuously buying and selling all forms of rare coins and precious metals, estates, accumulations. We will travel to buy occasionally if it's sensible for us. We have, you know, it's tough sometimes. People don't understand that when we kind of uproot for an entire day and travel, and, you know, I've had situations over the years where people just don't understand, and they really, what they really want is a free appraisal, which is fine. We can do that in the shop, but if you just want to know what it's worth or what we'll pay, you know, just call us. It's not that difficult often. People will have large collections, and they're just so certain, they're so hard to transport. And when we buy them, we'll compact them into boxes or whatever. If you have an estate or a collection or something someone accumulated and you want to know what it's worth, give us a call. We can talk about it, get a general idea of what you're dealing with, and help you out there. Also, if you've over the years bought or accumulated, or someone else you know has bought rare coins or whatever through companies over the years, like Investment Rarities or whatever back in the 80s and early 90s when they were selling a lot of stuff, give us a call. Let us help you evaluate that stuff. I've seen too many people that have bought stuff that was not probably what they should have been sold, and they'll get an evaluation long ago, and it wasn't a positive experience. In other words, it hadn't performed that well, and they'll just kind of forget about it and put it away. If it's not a good investment, it's not a good investment. But, you know, I'm not saying it maybe couldn't have turned around or whatever, but whatever it is, it makes good sense to evaluate what you've got. It really makes good sense to make sure that you have a solid balance of material in your hard asset collection. First of all, one thing that is, I think, really important that God laid on my heart this weekend, and boy, what a can of worms in a way. You know, God blesses us with riches, and it's so tough to talk about because people abuse it, because we have greed and covetousness and you know, all these things and foolishness, and that's not what it's about. There's something about where God put us on this earth. Now, he has told us crystal clear, materialism, the love of money, all that stuff will destroy you, okay? It's wrong. It's a sin. What he's saying is enjoy what you have. Be content with what you have. Enjoy what I've given you. You don't have to desire. You know, I can't say you won't desire more, because let's face it, if grandma or mom is in the hospital and needs a cancer treatment and you don't have the money to pay for it, you're going to either pray for the money or pray for a miracle. You're going to pray for more. God put us in a situation like that where we know that his abundant wealth and riches help us. He's basically, we're the child of the king. One day we're going to go to heaven and there's going to be no shortage of anything. But on this earth, it's where we build faith. If we had everything we wanted all the time and desired nothing, we would be worthless. We would absolutely retract into destructive life behavior. For some reason, whenever life's going good, we tend to really mess up. We tend to get lackadaisical. We tend to, you know, we backslide. Something about challenge sharpens our lives. And God says he continuously disciplines us. He puts us in a state of need. He puts us in a state where we need to be on our knees asking him to meet our needs. That's when we're strong. And I think there's so, we're, basically, when we are weak, we are strong. The Bible's very clear about that. When we have nothing, we have everything in God's eyes. Everything with God is this antithetical opposite. What, you know, what's wisdom to the world is foolishness to God. You know, foolishness to the world is wisdom to God. Everything works that way. So because we struggle with something, often as Christians, we treat the discussion of money like an alcoholic who's trying not to drink, okay? And that's not the approach at all. We don't say, you know, I cannot have one drink because one drink leads to two drinks and two drinks leads to six. And pretty soon I'm wrecking the car and burning the house down or whatever happens when, you know, people drink too much. But the point is, it's the same with money. It's not money or wealth or riches that are the problem. There are so many scriptures that tell us about riches in many, many ways. You know, they tell us don't trust in your wealth and boast about your riches. They tell us, you know, doing that is a bad thing, right? But at the same time, you go to like Proverbs 3. He's talking about wisdom. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are what? Riches and honor. Then Proverbs 8, riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness, again, with wisdom. Riches, you know, there's on and on and on where it goes like this. You don't trust in your riches, it's very clear. But the crown, Proverbs 14, the crown of the wise is their riches, but the folly of fools is foolishness. The reward, Proverbs 22, the reward of humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. Now, I love this one because, and I'll explain why. Proverbs 24, by knowledge, the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. Okay? And the reason I like that is simple. God's telling us about wealth accumulation. He's telling us with wisdom, we will actually accumulate wealth. Proverbs 24 that I just read, it says in 3, by wisdom a house is built, by understanding it is established, and by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. The reason that that's good is if you go back over history, time back, wealth accumulation, collectibles, you know, precious things, gold, silver, whatever. These are the things that really serve the best purpose for you on earth as far as a savings account. And the reason I say that is that God knows that you, well, man, really, really can drop the ball. Over the years, we have dropped the ball in so many different ways and on a national basis, okay? When we put our hard earnings into the hands of somebody else, we are trusting what God gives us to a man, okay? But when he shows us that we can actually accumulate wealth, literally in the Bible, physical goods, okay? Now, there's a reason for this, and the reason is simple. It's God says to it's wise to accumulate riches and treasures rather than handing our money off to someone to manage, okay? There's a lot of reasons for that. We have become awkwardly comfortable with this completely foolish notion that our money is, quote, safe in an account, unquote, you know, an account under someone else's trust. It is not the case, okay? Jesus said he entrusted himself to no man, for he knew what was on man's heart. When you go back through history, and granted, we do things different now because we've created this quirky paper system, where we have set up a system, Keynesian economics, that is specifically designed without your eyes opened, it's hard to comprehend. The system is specifically designed to confiscate your wealth, okay? When you're a business owner like I am, you pay 55% tax, 39.7% income tax, and you pay both sides of Social Security, so 7.85% times 2, which is 15.7%. So 15.7 plus 39.7, so roughly 55%. That's Keynesian economics, literally, and I'll tell you, folks, it bothers me. I mean, there's times, like I was telling my employee, I said, what really bothers me is I'm digging this stuff out of my inventory that I've had here forever, and I'm selling it to him, to people, and, you know, I'm making 4% or whatever, and I have to pay a 55% tax on it. It's terrible. And then we die, and then they take more on a state and federal level. They have death tax. I mean, folks, it is designed that every penny goes back through the hands of the government. It's designed that way. I had a gal call me the other night. Her husband is ready to go into state care or whatever, and she's got a substantial amount of medals and coins that we've sold her over the years, and she's struggling, you know, because what the way the system's set up is if your spouse is going to go into permanent long-term care and they're going to be on Medicare, Medicaid, whatever it is, they require you to completely and fully deplete all of your assets before they kick in. You as the spouse are required to essentially go bankrupt on paper, to drain yourself, you know? And so here's the struggle she's going through. She has a substantial amount of medals. They're not, you know, they're not titled. They're not recorded. They're very private. They're very anonymous. She's like, what do? I have to disclose all my assets. Well, they want to know about all my assets. What do I do with this? Do I disclose it? Do I not? So she and I talked a while, and I'm not going to tell you what we discussed, and I'm also not going to tell you what decision she made. That decision's up to her. But I, you know, it's a very frustrating point. The fact that she had the medals and the coins and the hard assets, I guess at least gave her the option of struggling with the decision. Whereas if she had turned over all she had to somebody else, not only would she not have what she started with, but she'd have it all confiscated anyway. I was talking to a friend today. Who's, you know, he's getting a little older. He's in his 30s, late 30s. And he's talking about saving, you know, and retirement and all this stuff. And we were talking about options and coins and hard assets. And I was talking about what I'm talking with you about right now. And I said, what's really sad is my parents, their whole lives saved 10% of what they made. I mean, nonstop. And they always gave their money to a broker. And as I became more intelligent in college and and got to the point where I could discuss this stuff with them more, especially once I became a banker, they were continuously in the tank. I mean, continuously in the tank, okay? In other words, all their investments were down all the time. This is not unique, folks. I am telling you, you are probably down too if you're in the same boat. There are little micro windows where you're going to see some growth, but I'll tell you what's crazy. If you see the upside of the Dow or the S&P or the NASDAQ, your investment's not up as much as that. But if you see it go down, in other words, if the Dow goes up 10%, you are going to be up 4%. If the Dow goes down 10%, you are going to be down 16%. It is the biggest racket I've ever seen. And throughout history, what God knows is that empires fall. Knowledgeable historians understand that or have learned that God knows that man is wretched and terrible when given the opportunity. I mean, we're all aware of the Holocaust and the persecution of the Jews, including the theft of all their resources. However, you know, no one ever, we really don't talk about the, think about this number, hundreds of millions of people slaughtered in the 20th century by Russia, Mussolini, Mao Zedong, the genocide of the Armenians by the Turks, and so on. Man is evil and man destroys. America is currently under pressure and threat by the same exact forces that have driven these prior Holocausts. The hatred of the atheistic and godless communistic and socialistic philosophies that always lead to the vilest acts of racial or religious cleansing are upon us. They're here. They're infiltrating. They're growing. They never stop. 24/7. It's a cancer, folks. It's a cancer. It's among you. Like it or leave it. Now, it's tough. Where's it going? Can't tell you right now, but I know that you got to be wise. You got to be careful. And I can tell you also, when these acts, well, these acts always include the confiscation of assets held by enemies of the state, which are falsely accused of treason. This is what they've done to the Jews. This is what they've done to the Armenians. This is what they do in every communistic society. So we take a plummet under Obama, a pretty good one, and Trump's scrambling, trying to hold things together. We are basically attacking him, the media and the left wing, just barraging him, attacking him all the time, critical, critical, critical. So he cannot accomplish anything. They're going to just, they're blown away that Americans are like, I don't like what I'm seeing. I don't like what's happened. And we've got to make it better, because the media made Obama like a saint, literally. And everything he did was perfect. And they don't understand the will of the people are fed up. And so Trump gets elected. They're in shock. So the media, protected by the First Amendment, the Fourth Estate, is going out of their way in every possible manner to destroy what the people of the United States have willed. Is this good? Heck no. This is communistic propaganda. This is ultimately Marxism. I touched a little bit on Friday on the Frankfurt School, which is really what the root cause of all this is. It's absolutely an agenda. It is a strict agenda. Designed, you know, Satan's secret agents, really, among us, to just secretly infiltrate us with this racial, you know, continuous division, racism and hate speech and, you know, sexual dysfunction and homosexualization and, you know, pornography and undermining parental and teachers' authority and all this immigration mess, that to destroy our national identity and foment, you know, what does this immigration mess do? It foments future race wars. This is all they're doing, is just constantly building division. The systematic promotion of, you know, recreational drugs and, you know, what, and, you know, all this social media garbage where all you do, you know what social media does to kids? Okay, think about this. Video games and social media. Video games, you run around, you destroy, right? No consequences whatsoever. Social media, same thing. You don't like somebody, what do? Oh, I'm unfriending you. I'm literally seeing adults, grown adults, literally doing this to people. I've seen a contractor, two of them, actually, working with people that are supposed to be good, godly Christian men that have literally finished a project. They've had problems with the project that they needed to go back and make right. And in both cases, they block the person's phone number and they just shut off and move on. And these are guys. One of them I know is like, you know, an elder or whatever at a big church in town. He doesn't know I know all this, but it's terrible. I mean, is this godly? No, this stuff is is being driven by our instant gratification society. So why did I bring that up? Okay, so if you're disposable, if I play video games and I destroy anything that gets in my way, and then all I need to do is unfriend you and block your phone number, what happens when the socialists come around, okay, and you've got no backbone? How hard is it to go from that to the eradication of another life to protect your own? You might think, well, that's a big stretch. Well, really? Why is it that in countries, I mean, research, folks, we hear all about the Jewish Holocaust. Go research some of these other Holocausts that are much larger. Go research the cleansing of the Armenian population by the Turks at the end of the Ottoman Empire before France came and saved them. I mean, seriously, this stuff's sick. I mean, people cave quickly. Nazi Germany, I've talked about it. It's not one man. It wasn't Hitler. Hitler just brought out what everybody had been trained to do. Blame the Jews, blame the Jews, blame the Jews. And their economy was bad and life was tough, so blame the Jews. Well, guess what happens here in America when we have immigrants? And all of a sudden we've got socialists who destroy our economy. What happens? The conservative-minded people or whatever start to say, these immigrants are stealing all our jobs or destroying our country. All of a sudden you got a race war going on. And pretty soon the government, you know, empowers the working man, as they always call him. And then they empower the working man to take out the elite. They say, if we get rid of all these filthy, rotten, rich, productive elite members of society that won't share, then we're going to create a utopia. We've done it over and over and over again. This is nothing new under the sun, folks. And, you know, I'll tell you, when this stuff comes down, if you have all your money in, you know, some brokerage account somewhere, when this stuff comes into play, I'm telling you, one election, people were talking about Obama passing an executive order, leaving himself in office, to remove the executive order that said that presidents can only serve two terms. Guess what percentage of Americans said that they would be okay with Obama running for and serving a third term as president? 57%. Here's the problem. We are deceived. Oh, this is a democracy. No, it's not. It's a foundational republic, constitutional republic, with a firm set of laws and rules. But if everybody's been brainwashed generation after generation after generation, do you know how many people I have talked to that bring up this separation of church and state, and they literally think, or here, I'll take it further. I have spoken to two attorneys with law degrees who claim to be constitutional attorneys. One in particular said to me, we had a discussion, and he said, it's the in the Constitution, the separation of church and state. I said, it is not. He said, it is two. We did the is not, is two thing. This is an attorney. I said, here's the Constitution. You show me where it's at. He says, I'll gladly do that. He grabs the Constitution, goes to the First Amendment, starts reading and says, huh, well, that doesn't say it there like I thought it did. I said, no, it doesn't. I said, you have a law degree in Constitution. He goes, well, we were never required to read the Constitution. This is a true conversation I had, folks. And I said, well, obviously you're deceived. He said, well, that's what they meant. Congress shall make no law prohibiting the free expression of religion. Says that somehow the state's supposed to prohibit the free expression of religion. What they were saying is denomination. The government will not endorse one denomination over another, period. The government will not have a preferred religious denomination, because that's what had happened in England, and it was a mess. It destroyed people. It became a theocracy. That's what they were avoiding. And the best way to become a theocracy is what? To prevent people from the free expression of their own faith. So when our government starts to oppress people of faith, guess what their theocracy is? Atheism. Guess what atheism is associated with? Communism. And you know what communism does? It destroys. This is why we think, we've been brainwashed now to think that the mainline, the neutral point, the point of mediocre, in other words, you know, the point of no opinion or whatever, I'm not finding the word right now, is atheism. That's idiocy. Atheism is a severely harsh, extreme, active, dynamic belief system. It is a faith that is harder to believe and stronger to adhere to, harder to adhere to than a faith in God, because you have got to eradicate all common sense, all logic. You literally sit around in your measly little mind and think that you're somehow grandiose in thinking. And then these guys sit around and smoke pot together, and then they sit and have thoughts and get impressed with each other's thoughts. Are the thoughts that we think, folks, are nothing more than the thoughts that God has allowed us to think. He's given us each a central processing unit called the brain to make free will and to give us free will in order to find out who he is by our own choice, so that he has free will beings that will spend eternity with him in heaven. We are going to sin. We are going to fall. Therefore, he gives his son to offer mercy and grace to forgive us so that we go through this whole test, this whole journey. He forgives us, but once we accept him and we turn our heart over to him, we're continuously pressing towards the goal of perfection, which we will not achieve on this earth, contrary to some belief systems. But we are only given the ability to think within certain parameters. We look into outer space, we don't even know what we're looking at. There are, you know, we've invented black holes and wormholes, and that's all based on, you know, our understanding of physics at the time. There are areas of our own galaxy that have the biggest black spots. We don't know what we're looking at. Just solid black. No light is coming out. I'm not talking in the general region of a few stars. I'm talking like 10%. We don't know. We don't even know, you know, we only know what we know about light from what we observe on Earth and from what God gave us. When we look at the light spectrum and we see red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, and then we can see infrared and X-ray and gamma ray, if you look at that line of the light spectrum, there are these little things that pop up. There's an infinite line of something that we can't see. You can literally see it. You can see what you can't see. In other words, you can go to different frequencies of light. It's not there. We can't see it. But we know it's there because scientifically, mathematically, it's proven to be there. We don't know. We don't even know what we don't know. We just know we don't know. I mean, God gave us eyes to see and ears to hear, all within a minuscule bandwidth to function, to communicate, to see, to come to this earth, to learn about him, to spread the good news, to live a life committed to him, and then turn around and pass it on. And then move on and live with him in eternity. That's just the system he made. We don't understand it. He's given us the Bible. The Bible is more than sufficient, but folks, it's nowhere near complete. The Bible is a blink glimpse of what God wants us to see. There's so much we don't know. In fact, there's so much that even the Jews know that we don't even accept as Christians. We don't even research and look into it. We don't care, because most people aren't into apologetics. You know, most people, which is fine, you know, they just want to know the personal applications of their faith, which is fine. That's good. But you want to delve deeper when God says it's his nature to hide a thing and a king's nature to find it out. When you read Proverbs or Psalms, and he says he talks about the king, that's because he was a king. Solomon wrote Proverbs. He was the king. When he says a king's nature to find it out, he means the greatest, you know, man's nature, which means you and I as well. If, in other words, if it's good enough for the king, it's sure as heck good enough for us. But this, you know, I guess the point of what I'm saying is when you put your money in the hands of man, remember what Jesus said. He entrusted himself to no man, for he knew what was on man's mind or man's heart. And, you know, his people carried gold and silver and whatnot. And then when he, you know, when he went out in Matthew 10, I think it is, when he says, let me check here. Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out, to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. And then he goes on and tells you the names. A couple quick things. Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out, heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. And he says, now here's the names of the 12 apostles. He's saying Jesus called 12 specific men to him. He gave them specific, unique spiritual powers to do the incredible on this earth. And he said, now these are the 12 that got it. There are churches today that say, well, look, these disciples can do it. You're a disciple. Go heal and cast out demons. And it says, to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Have you seen a person walking on this earth today that can do that? Nope. But yet the name it and claim it movement tries to tell you this. You know, just more faith, more faith, more faith. Like these disciples had incredible faith. Have you read their stories? They were a bunch of fumbling, bumbling men. They were people. They fell. They didn't. It wasn't them. It was God that gave them the power. I'm only saying that because there's these faith movements that literally try to empower people with this. And everybody's sitting in their congregation. You know, they have a certain percentage of them have financial problems, and a certain percent have physical ills, and a certain percent have cancer, and a certain percent have family problems. And they claim, oh my gosh, you can call on God. You can demand God, command him to do whatever you want, whenever you want, however you want. And the next week, the same percentage of people have the same struggles. Now, when they pray and ask God, oh yes, he can do the unfathomable. Don't get me wrong. But this command it stuff ain't what we are given as believers. We need to draw from him by faith. God's got his own will. Just because you're struggling with an illness or a sickness doesn't mean you've fallen or sinned. Christ was crystal clear about that. In fact, he talked about a child being born with an ailment strictly for the glory of God. So, you know, don't carry that burden around. Don't carry it. We're broken. You know, if everybody on earth was healed, this wouldn't be earth. This is a broken, fallen place. All those things go together to make us who we are, to give us this experience that is phenomenal. It's painful, and it's joyful, and it's everything. Some of us are severely depressed and suffer from extreme anxiety. And, you know, I mean, it's tough. It's not easy. God never said it would be. But heaven awaits. There is glory ahead. And I'm telling you, he is good. And if you know the Lord, you don't know what you don't know. In other words, to live without him, to live without any hope is just dire. And so, and God can do the unthinkable. God can do the phenomenal and the unfathomable. But we can't name it and claim it. And I could go on with that scripture because I love it, but I'm not going to. There's a lot more there. But basically what I was talking about, God says clearly in the Word that by wisdom a house is built, understanding it's established, by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. What it means by knowledge is that to get good, collectible, solid, you know, investment quality items, you got to have knowledge. The word knowledge is dahath in Hebrew. It means perception, skill, discernment, understanding, etc. I could keep going, but it's wisdom. And so when we do portfolios, we literally are using wisdom. We are building you an investment vehicle, a savings device based on wisdom. When people come in and they say, I just want a bunch of gold, I want a bunch of silver, and that's that, and that's this, and I read the web, and blah, blah, blah. First of all, there's nothing you can read on the web anymore, folks, that isn't paid advertising. Google. Now, like people say, well, I don't use Google. I use Smart Search, or I use whatever that's completely filtered. No one knows who my IP address. Go read their text. They go right through Google. They just don't let Google know who you are. They have one front IP address that filters everything. But it's still the same information. It's paid. It's sad. It is not organic. Our searches are not organic. So when you think you're making yourself an expert, you're just reading what people have paid to feed you, sadly. But I'm to clarify, you need to accumulate physical wealth. Now, when empires crumble and collapse, assets are seized. Accounts are frozen. We get to these times when one family member goes down, the whole family goes down. This may sound extreme, but America is in utter chaos right now, folks. I'm concerned. I understand God's timing is different than our timing, that He can do anything. We have been infiltrated by so much filth. It'd be lovely to have a spiritual revival in this nation. But the reality is we have let in the enemy at such a high quotient. For years and years and years, we were allowing the Judeo-Christian-based immigrants to come into this country. We may have fought between the Irish and the Italians and all that, which was also a very difficult time. But they had a generalized faith, a Christian-based faith. Now we've got a heavy influx of Islam, of Buddhism and Hinduism. But Islam is the great threat of all. Jefferson wrote clearly about it. Jefferson ran for president after being the ambassador to France, meeting with him and Adams, meeting with the Pasha of Tripoli, because we were paying 20% of our congressional yearly budget to bribe the Barbary pirates. He came back after having the Pasha of Tripoli give him a Quran and tell him, you're a no good, rotten infidel, that I can capture you, I can make you my slave, you're unworthy, there's no mutual understanding here. Jefferson came back, went to Congress and said, stop the bribes, they're not working. Congress, in his wording, was cowardly. And he said, I'm running for president. He became president, and his first act was to develop the Navy, which is now the Navy, and go out and really let them have it. And he sent a handful of witnesses back to Tripoli, and that's why the Marines' song says, to the shores of Tripoli, because he told them, you touch one of our citizens again, and we're coming to the shores of Tripoli, and we're going to do to you there what we did to them here on the ships. And what we did to those men, those barbarians, Barbary pirates, was heinous and rough and rude, but it's what they understood. And it stopped the violent interaction with the Muslims. The Muslim violence is nothing new. When I was just mentioning the ethnic cleansing of the Armenians by the Turks, oh yes, that was the Muslims again. Millions and millions and millions. It is a conscienceless religion. They have no conscience. They are, their conscience is inconsistent with ours. It's the devil's religion. They're not allowed to think. If they begin to think and doubt and question their faith, Allah is releasing his hand on them, and they are now bound for hell. If they blow themselves up while blowing up a bunch of innocents, oh, they go to heaven and get their special virgins, 72 of them. And, they, you know, in the Quran, it says that sex in their paradise is different than sex here. And, you know, it goes on forever and blah, 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 blah. And they get these 21-year-old men that are like, that sounds really awesome to me. And they go for it. And it's really pathetic. On the contrary, in Christianity, we have the book of Proverbs written to my son, my son, my son. Young man, be careful. We know that young men can transform this world in very good and very bad ways. And so the Bible warns them, be gentle, be kind, be loving, be gracious, be wise, have integrity. Treat women and children especially well, you know. Speak with grace. This is the Bible. The Quran, you know, says lacerate, destroy, declare jihad on everyone, and, you know, just express anger and destruction and live like a barbarian in the Middle Ages. Folks, it is a terrible religion. We have let it fully infiltrate our nation. Whether you like it or not, we are going to have more and more and more terrorist attacks. Every single time one happens, you're going to lose a little bit more of your civil rights. And as you lose a little bit more of your civil rights, they're gaining more. Why? Because, oh, don't offend Muhammad. Don't speak freely. You know, why are we doing this? What has happened to us? Politics, votes. It's been twisted. This is the democratic deception. We're a democracy. Our politicians want to earn more votes, so they cater to this insanity. It's absolutely crazy. I think you'd agree. Now, so back, you know, just to simplify and leave it at that, I believe we are called and directed to accumulate physical assets on this earth. I mean, it's crystal clear. God names them. Second chapter of Genesis, he starts to talk about gold, where to get it, blesses the patriarchs with it. It goes all throughout. Even Jesus, when he sends out his disciples, he says, don't carry any gold or silver or whatever. He doesn't say fiat currency or money or, you know, don't put your money in a bank account. The point is, at that point, he's saying gold and silver is wealth. He's not saying don't have it, don't care about it. He's saying a man's worthy of his wage. You will be cared for. You'll be tended to. The point is, he's highlighting it, saying this is wealth. Don't chase wealth as a disciple of his who've now been given the greatest spiritual gifts of any humankind before or since. I would hope so that they might have their back covered. But God, he's also a wrathful God. He says, you know, when you go into a town, if they accept you, bless it. If they don't, basically curse it, kick the dust off your feet. And he says, woe to you, Chorazin. I mean, this is a wrathful God, right? He says, woe to you. If even a fraction of the acts that have been done in you had been done in Sodom and Gomorrah, they would have been saved to this day. He's saying, you're so hard and so calloused that if I would have even made near the efforts with Sodom and Gomorrah that I've made with you, they would never have been destroyed like this. And you know, folks, that is a message to us. You know, he's telling us, you have me, the Son of God. You've got my word. You've got my grace. You've got my wisdom all around you, all about you, at your fingertips. If I would have given this same blessing to Sodom and Gomorrah, they would have never been destroyed. So I guess we should take that fairly personal. You know, and it's interesting, people don't read a lot of this. I'm bouncing through Matthew 10. I didn't intend to. Here's a scripture to think about. He who receives you receives me. I mean, I'll back up. Well, anyway, I'll just... He who's found his life will lose it. He who's lost his life for my sake will find it. You know, so all these people, I got to find myself and figure out who I am. You're going to lose your life. Your life's not that impressive or that important. You need to find Jesus. He who receives you receives me as a believer. He who receives me receives him who sent me, obviously God. Then he says, he who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. He who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. Now think about this. How many religions say, oh, Jesus was a prophet. Jesus was a righteous man. We believe Jesus was God and the Messiah. Okay? So he's saying, if you receive me as God the Messiah, then you get God and a Messiah. If you receive me as a prophet in the name of a prophet, like in the name of Allah, or Muhammad, I'm sorry, you get a prophet's reward. What's a prophet's reward? A little bit of glory before man, no salvation. If you receive me as a righteous man, in the name of righteous man, then you get a righteous man's reward. He's basically saying, you know, you reap what you sow. You want me to be a prophet? Then you don't get all the benefits of my salvation. You want to call me something I'm not? Great. But you can't call on me for anything because I'm not what I say I am, apparently, according to you. So when, you know, that's why a cult denies his deity. Jesus Christ is God, period. When they deny that, they are excluding themselves from all of the benefits of having a Messiah, of accepting the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Whoever in the name of a disciple gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. So, you know, we need to serve those who serve God. But don't be deceived. Be wise. Another thing I kind of wanted to touch on today briefly, and this is kind of bizarre and random maybe sounding, is husbands, godly wives, keep your word. Just this came on this weekend. I was praying. It came on. God gives me, I believe he leads me in a direction. And I need to share this. Reasons are excuses, okay? If you don't keep your word and you've got reasons, a reason is an excuse. An excuse is a reason. It doesn't change the fact that you didn't keep your word or do what's right, okay? So right is right. And another thing, wives, try not to guilt trip men for working. God created a two-parent home for a reason. Mothers of young children should not work away from the home if they can help it at all, but the man should be encouraged to produce revenue. God says in Genesis, he did this for our benefit. That's his words. Balance is also a key. Fathers should put children first. Men should not spend time at a bar or some inordinate amount of energy into a non-income-producing hobby outside of work. If they do, their children will learn skewed priorities towards others. Fathers should spend spare time at home with children who are young. If a man is out, it should be for the benefit of the family, not excessive personal recreation. Some men go from one block of time wasting to another. Focusing this energy on positive production is the difference between success and failure over time. Quality time is more important than quantity of time, but perception is everything. Children should not see a parent excessively immersed in a futile hobby to the detriment of their families. And then I grew up in Great Falls, Montana. We had Malmstrom Air Force Base. A lot of those kids were in our school system. A lot of those fathers were deployed for 6 months a year. But the system exalted the men in the eyes of the children. you know, these military bases, schools, and leaderships, they conveyed a positive message to families about their father's sacrifice, and the families were proud of these men, okay? And my point is this, and I'm only saying this because I know there's women out there that are guilt-tripping their men. I've been around. I have seen these wives that are calling their husband, can you come home yet? What are you doing? You need to come home, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, let the guy work. Encourage him to earn the bread. I actually know a situation right now where these people are struggling financially, literally struggling. This wife will literally call this husband and guilt trip him all the time to come home early, you know, don't put in the hours, you know, you got to spend more time at home. And then she'll guilt trip him for not making enough money. This is a fact. It's just destroying this guy because he's got two choices, fight or flight. I mean, fight or cave, right? Women, you need to encourage your men to be what God made them to be. We are made to produce. Men get satisfaction from accomplishment. If your man doesn't get satisfaction from accomplishment, then you have a greater problem. He has basically denied what God puts into us as men. Women are motherly. And I know in society there's women that say, well, you know, that's not true. I love having a career. I love being out working. And, you know, and I read a study that raising your kids in a daycare is actually better for them because they get social interaction. Wrong. Look at our society. Give me a break. Are you serious? I mean, look around. If it's such a great thing, why are these kids, you know, why is a quarter of Americans on some kind of medication for anxiety and depression, and, you know, our unwed living arrangements have increased ninefold in like the last 20 years. And I mean, we're living in sin. You know, if you're a believer, live it. You know, and if you've got so much debt you can't handle it, find a way to liquidate and get out. You've got to give up. You may need to tear off the Band-Aid hard once and start fresh. I don't know. We did it when we were young. We literally lived in dire poverty for a number of years while I worked my tail off and prayed twice as hard. And God honored that over time and gave us an opportunity. But there's got to be a hunger there. But you can't have both, you know. You just can't. God laid that on my heart. And when women push their men too far and they guilt trip them and they don't encourage them to be the way God made them, you know, when women who tear down their husband's efforts, I mean, technically that's nagging and being contentious. And when it says, you know, better to be on a rooftop than in the house with a contentious woman, I mean, watch what you say, watch how you say it. I mean, if everything you say is not harmonious, we need to seek harmony in our conversations. Agree as much as you can. When you're talking with somebody, even if you don't agree, find a point of agreement and then propose your view as a question or a mild suggestion. Don't get harsh. In marriages, things can get real harsh, but you don't want to do that. It's important that wives edify and support their husbands. Encourage a man to excellence in his profession, and God will bless your finances and your family. If you discourage a man's work efforts, you will tear down his profession and his family. And like I said, God put that on my heart this weekend. Important, you know, like I said, you know, I've been doing some research on history of communism, the destructive nature of it. I actually see it infiltrated so deeply into our system now. It's just a matter of time as it metastasizes. I'm sorry to say that, but I just can't see an alternative. Civil war would never be prosperous because our government is so far out armed over us. The police, you know, I have unfortunately gotten super fear-based, very militaristic. There's really not a lot of respect for the people anymore. They see the people as their enemy. They're cold in general. It's just a tough situation. They aren't discerning the good citizens from the bad any longer. and everyone who comes in their crosshairs is kind of becoming offended. I'm talking to more and more people who are really having bad experiences, and it's just it's fearsome. And they're being trained by military personnel, ex-military, who are trained to kill. And we're no longer being trained by society experts on how to defuse and build rapport. And I'm not criticizing people in law enforcement, but there's a difference between a hall monitor that runs around and enforces a bunch of rules that don't really impact society a whole heck of a lot, and somebody who's truly enforcing laws that that protect the well-being of society, like robbery and rape and, you know, murder and heavy theft and auto theft. And there's so much of it out there now, and it's so much easier to just give traffic tickets and generate extraordinary amounts of revenue, where these cities are literally budgeting millions and millions and millions of dollars a year, and these police officers are expected to produce this. They don't realize that they're being used that way, but it's just tough, you know. So we're definitely in a major transitional theme in this nation. I'm saying, from a financial perspective, get hard assets. They're yours. They're private. They're anonymous. They're, you know, there's a lot of advantages and benefits, biblical especially. So you can call Coins Plus 444-0044, toll free 877-TAP-COIN, or through the website at coinsplus.com. We really are digging through the vault, and we're putting together a lot of my old stuff and stuff that I've kind of held on to a long time, and I'm trying to transfer this into our customers' hands just because it's good stuff and it's worth having. And now's a good time to do it. Prices are right. Summer's always the best time to buy. The fall's always where tough stuff comes on us, and September, October comes quickly, and that's when we're going to see some transition this year. So thanks for tuning in again. Take care. God bless, and I will be back on Wednesday. Bye-bye.